Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back, as is Drew Deitch. We are talking about Children of the Corn 3 Urban Harvest. It is a direct-to-video movie from 1995. Its age does show a little bit, but Drew, you volunteered for this one, so I was like, all right, definitely knew I was doing the first one, and then this one when you signed up for it, so then I had to coax Mirjani into doing the second one with me a little bit, and, you know, I think after this one, we might be done with the Children of the Corn movies, just because there are literally seven more. You know, they made one as recently as 2018, which is too recent, in my opinion.
Well, I know you and I did the original Children of the Corn movie episode, and it's never been a franchise that I've felt the need to dive into, because I felt, you know, we set our thoughts on the first movie. I know I saw the second one, but I remember next to nothing of it, though I do believe there is some footage in Children of the Corn 3 that is kind of repurposed flashback footage from 2 and the first movie as well.
Yeah.
So Children of the Corn 3, the reason I sought it out is that there's this book that I recommended you get called Creep Shows.
I did buy it.
Yeah, it was a chronicle of all the Stephen King film and TV adaptations up to the point of its publishing. The section on Children of the Corn 3, I believe, has Stephen King mentioning that's actually a pretty good movie. He's like, one of the Children of the Corns is pretty good. I think the third one.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay. Stephen King seemed to like it. And looking it up and finding out some of the people involved with it, specifically the head effects people, which were Screaming Mad George and Kevin Yeager, they're big names in the creature and monster effects horror world.
Okay.
So I wanted to check it out years ago, and I came away as... I mean, I haven't seen any of the other Children of the Corn movies past the first three, but I feel like 3 might be the highest note it can possibly go out on, because 3 is bonkers.
I will say I still like the first one a little more than this one, but this was way, way better as a sequel than the second one was. So it was one of those things where, you know, this started out and... story-wise, I thought it was interesting because of the fact that they took these farm kids out of, you know, the Gatlin area and took them to this urban city, hence the name Urban Harvest. I was like, oh, that makes a lot more sense now, because, you know, this takes place in Chicago. And while the opening was pretty dramatic, I thought the effects were very well done. And there are times throughout the movie where you're kind of like, oh, yeah, that looks like something from the 90s for sure. And it doesn't age quite as well. But overall, I like the story idea, because if you're not going to pull directly from the source material, the best way to, I think, advance the story is to make it your own. And I felt like this one did that a lot better than the second one did.
It's funny, I think the Children of the Corn series, after a point, it may have been the kind of series where it was based off of other spec scripts that weren't Children of the Corn, and then they got kind of reconfigured into it. But this one feels, like you're saying, a real good, obvious evolution. Like, well, let's get the story out of Gatlin. Let's get it out of the rural area and take it to the city and see what kind of stuff we can play around with in that. And I will say, Children of the Corn 3 : Urban Harvest is not without something on its mind. It seems to, I think, echo something of the source material and the original film's fears, which is, what if children are being kind of indoctrinated by really warped beliefs, whether they be religious or anything like that. And this one having it where the new evil kid character, Eli, is converting all these kids at his school to his cult about he who walks behind the rose, and this, you know, very creepy, conservative, kind of Amish themed sect. I like that there's something there, that this movie isn't solely coasting on horror thrills, although I will say I think the horror thrills are what really make this movie stand out for me, because every time there's some kill or an effect, it goes full tilt crazy, like to the point of there's no way they intended me to take this 100% serious because this is just so over the top.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, I felt that Eli was almost as creepy as Isaac from the first one, but not quite. So you have this evil kid feeling again, and yet he still somehow somewhat looks like an adult, not nearly to the extent that Isaac does. He literally looks like an adult in a child's body in the first movie. But with Eli and Josh, it's like, okay, you have these two brothers who have been so close, and we go on to find out that they were actually adopted brothers. So Eli was not Joshua's biological brother, but him and his dad had been taking care of him. And, you know, while Joshua's dad didn't seem like the nicest guy in the world, Eli certainly isn't the nicest kid in the world either. And Joshua sort of figures that out as he does a much better job of adapting to the Chicago lifestyle and not looking like, you know, this Amish kid from the country, which the other kids kind of make fun of them for on their first couple days. And Eli is just so stuck in his ways that instead of adapting to the situation around him, he's just going to make everyone else adapt to what he wants, which is to harvest this corn in the middle of a rundown factory in Chicago, which, you know, not a place corn would grow, for sure. I think we can all agree on that.
Oh, but this supernatural corn, I think they even say at a point, it's like, oh, the soil here is so horrible, and yet you're able to grow this amazing super corn. It's like, ah, because it's devil corn. Understand, like, that's one of the reasons I love this movie is because I get to say something like devil corn, because that's a thing in this movie. There is evil supernatural corn, which certainly was in previous Children of the Corn movies, but I feel like this is the first one that really runs with that concept and says, like, this is silly, so why not have the most fun with it we can? So I really think that the thing that stands out for me about Children of the Corn 3 is that kind of embracing the silly gonzo, almost EC Comics nature of the material. But there are some things that hamper it. And you mentioned Eli, the actor who plays him, Dan O'Cerny, he's okay, but a majority of his performance seems to have been dubbed over. I mean, sometimes it seems like it's his actual voice. Other times it appears that he has just been dubbed to sound maybe a little bit older. You know, this isn't counting when he's saying some demonic stuff and getting weird voice effects. It's like, no, even during just simple scenes. So I think a little bit of his performance, it gets lost because of that aspect. And even so, I think the performance that we see is okay. But if this was like a really charismatic, wonderfully kind of big showy performance from a kid actor as this supernatural villain, I think it would land a lot more than it does in the current version.
Yeah, it was also one of those things where when I went into this, I didn't really recognize any of the cast either. It's like, upon looking some of them up, I was like, oh, okay, these people have appeared in, you know, multiple TV shows as character actors or whatever. But, you know, like you mentioned, the kid who plays Eli, he was fine, but he didn't really go on to do a whole lot else as far as I know. And I feel like with a lot of these Children of the Corn movies, they'll get, you know, a couple of people who end up to go on and have long careers. You know, obviously Linda Hamilton from the first one had a very, very different career path after Children of the Corn. So it's one of those things where every once in a while you'll recognize someone who pops up in here. And I believe, you know, they have some fun facts where Ron Howard's dad played one of the employees, and then Charlize Theron, she popped up as one of Eli's followers. And I was very carefully watching for her because I was like, okay, they just have a group of people. And I think I caught a glimpse of her like once or twice, but I don't think she really has any spoken lines.
No.
And I was like, okay, amazing that you got this big name, or this person who would go on to be such a big name, as an uncredited person in Children of the Corn 3.
Yeah, no, Charlize is in the movie. She doesn't have any speaking lines. I think you can see her in a couple group shots, and then there's one extreme close-up when they're doing a montage of some of the kids' faces in the cult.
Yeah.
And it's like that. It's like just that you can tell. It's like, oh, my gosh, she's, you know, piercing. You can tell that she's just got that factor that would take her on to the career she has. So there is fun little stuff like that. I think, and I'll get to why I love this movie in a minute, but I will stay critical. I think the big problem with Children of the Corn 3 is that when the more kooky supernatural stuff isn't going on, the movie's pretty boring.
Mm-hmm.
That I will absolutely attest to that when it's, and I think it's a combination of a lot of factors. I don't think that the relationship between Eli and Joshua, it's actually set up really well. I like the little things like they always want to stay together and, you know, they sleep in the same bed together and all this kind of stuff. But after a certain point in the movie, once Joshua reveals that Eli's adopted, any kind of familial bond they have just gets thrown out the window. There doesn't seem to be any real conflict on Joshua's part about, like, okay, Eli's evil, but he's my brother. I love him. What can I do? Just immediately he's like, oh, you're bad, so I got to stop you. So there's no real good emotional stuff going on there. The rest of the movie is then very plotty. There's no real strong characters arcs or anything going on in the movie. So when the movie's not focused on the bigger kind of wackier plot elements, which involve all the, you know, devil corn and all these magical things that Eli can do whenever the movie desires him to do them, when that stuff isn't going on, the movie's a real slog.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's one of those things where, you know, as far as the relationship with Joshua and Eli goes, it was almost like Joshua had to be around normal kids to realize just how weird and strange Eli actually was. But when they were living out in the middle of nowhere, it's like, you know, Joshua didn't really have a whole lot of other people to base a relationship off of, especially, you know, a sort of sibling relationship. But then when he goes and meets the neighbors and sees sort of the brother-sister relationship, I feel like you kind of have to do a lot of piecing together to get to the point of Josh sort of just throwing their relationship out the window. And you're kind of just like, okay, yeah, I guess we'll just let this go because Eli is totally a creep. So, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the problem is that once Joshua starts finding out stuff about Eli, like they look up the killings in Gatlin and see it's like, oh, it dates back to 1964 and he hasn't aged. Josh kind of takes that in stride instead of being, this is kind of blowing my entire worldview right now. I don't mind the fact that by the end he is just completely against Eli and is going to kill him. I just wish that the movie played with the conflict that would arise from that situation a little bit more. As it is, there's not much really to go on. And that's the one real emotional idea that the movie has. And I don't think it handles it very well. However, in terms of being an effects-based wackadoo 90s direct-to-video horror movie, I think Children of the Corn 3 is pretty fantastic because every sequence that it has to do an effect or a gag, it just goes all the way in with whatever, you know, budget they were able to utilize and does really fun stuff. I mean, from the opening when Joshua's dad gets turned into a scarecrow and we see the stop motion fake puppet head with his eyes and mouth sealing up and his arms being ripped off to be lengthened. I'm like, oh yeah, this is nuts. And that's maybe in the first 5 minutes of the movie or so.
That actually looked pretty good because it was one of those things where I was like, oh, okay, this movie is off to a solid start because they're giving us these great effects. And granted, like I mentioned earlier, the effects don't always hold up. Like when Eli is burning the adoption lady,
oh, love
you're
it.
Just like, oh, okay, that, you know, obviously is definitely, you know, some dummy. Or when, you know, the monster at the end, which I believe they were calling Jiffy the Corn Monster on
that
set.
That sounds about right. It is a corn monster.
Yeah. When that grabbed Maria, you could tell that Maria just turned into a doll all of a sudden.
Oh my God, I love that shot more than life itself. There's a couple shots where the character Maria is getting grabbed by this Lovecraftian corn monster. That's so wonderful that I get to say that. And you cut to these shots and it is the most tiny little stick figure doll looking person that's flailing. It's probably, you know, just got a couple little gyros in it to help its arms and legs move a little bit, but it's so clearly a miniature. And I think that's one of the reasons I love this movie, is because all of that stuff to me is charming or even outright adorable because of how silly it is. Like you mentioned, the foster care worker whose head is engulfed in flames. She's trying to light a lighter, and then there's this all the composites in the movie don't look very good, but this composite shot of the flames shooting out of the lighter and then entering into her throat. And then just this focus on this big, dumb wax dummy head that melts down to a skull. And I'm like, this is nowhere near the realm of realistic. But my gosh, is this so charming, like, to see happen. And there's lots of, I don't know, fun, weird stuff that is sometimes, I think, intentionally funny. When Eli and Josh first get to their foster parents and they're going to have dinner and they're going to say grace, and Eli starts saying grace, and he says something like, you know, we give thanks to he who walks behind the rose and will punish the infidels in eternal hellfire. I'm like, this is funny. Like, this is like just this. There's also a section with the school principal, who's also the father, the priest there. And after Eli has converted all the kids to his cult, and this priest seems to be having nightmares and visions and stuff of some bad juju, and he's giving a sermon from Revelations, and at the end he's just shouting at this crowd of cult kids like, does anybody have any questions? Like, I'm like, this is so surreal and odd, but I have to believe it knows it is. Like, it knows it's being this kind of over the top, and I like when movies embrace that to the fullest.
I feel like this was one of those things where you knew some of it was going to be comically bad going into it, like, you know, the wax head being burned. And because of the fact that it was direct to video, you have a different set of expectations going into movies like this. It's how I felt about Sometimes They Come Back, A Return to Salem's Lot, you know, these ones that if they did get theatrical releases, they were very small. And initially, this movie was supposed to get a theatrical release in 1994, but it kind of just got put off to the point where, you know, in 1995, they were like, all right, direct-to-video it is. And I'm pretty sure every Children of the Corn movie after this was probably also direct-to-video, maybe, yeah, with the exception of the sixth one, because it was Isaac's Return. But I feel like that still would have been direct-to-video, too.
I think the Children of the Corn, with the exception of the first two films, they've all either been direct to video or like premiered on TV type stuff. I don't believe there's been another theatrical Children of the Corn movie since the second one. I may be wrong because they've made like five of them that I know nothing about.
Yeah.
I know enough about kind of the first six because that's what was around when I was growing up, but they've continued to make some. I think there was even a TV remake a couple years ago, or, you know, based off the original source material, something like that. But yeah, Children of the Corn 3, for a movie made in the early to mid 90s, the production quality isn't terrible. It's not a terrible looking movie. It's kind of flat, and the direction isn't quite as inspired as I think it could be. There's some cool choices, like very dreamy choices, like the lighting in that church scene that I mentioned is completely unrealistic, but it's creating a particular mood. And like I say, I really think that the gore effects, courtesy of Screaming Mad George and his company, are what set the movie apart, because anytime they have a chance to do something really silly and gross, I can feel them having fun with it, such as when a character is pulled apart by corn stalks and his head is made into like a giant corn stalk, and his
spine just gets pulled out.
Yeah, his spinal column is then like become part of the corn, and there's this huge zoom out to see this completely unrealistic, you know, length of what this is. But I'm like, yeah, that's funny. I like that. Same with, there's a homeless person who finds the devil corn field and is attacked by vines. And later they have like a puppet head of his that chomps on a kid's arm and is like pulling him underground. And he's got all these vines coming out of his eyes. I'm like, they know, like, they know this isn't supposed to be taken completely seriously. That their tongue is planted in their cheek for sure. So I can understand this. Like, it's not a scary movie at all, like, ever. But as far as being, like, a fun movie, like a kind of haunted house attraction of, oh, that's a fun little gag and stuff like that, I think the movie succeeds, especially, and this was a huge reason why I wanted to do this episode, is, like we said earlier, the final showdown between Eli and Joshua. You've got Eli and he's swinging this little sky thing and shooting out magic fireballs, which, okay, that's already ridiculous and silly. And they have to destroy him and his corn Bible at the same time. That happens. But then that, in the last 10 minutes of the movie, what can only be described as a giant Lovecraftian corn demon shoots up out of the ground. It's got, like, eyes all over it and a weird kind of, I don't know, like, if you took the face of a moray eel and, like, squished it, like, it's such a bizarre design.
It is. It really is. It's one of those things where you look at it and you're like, who came up with this? But I kind of am enjoying it.
This is only the second time I've seen this movie. And the thing is, like, I was like, no, I remember the corn demon. Like, I can see it perfectly in my mind, like, exactly what it was. And so then we get this wonderful montage of the cult members being killed. Like, one guy gets chopped in half basically by a falling window pane, and
yeah,
the corn monster is crucifying people by throwing little hand sides at them and stuff. It's totally wacko, and that's what really endears the movie to me, is when it does that kind of wacko effect stuff, when it really takes that stuff and runs with it. I think the movie is kind of a delight, because you can have people who watch it and they're like, this is so ridiculous and I'm enjoying it ironically. Or you can see it as like, yeah, this is legitimately fun, goofy monster stuff, which really the Children of the Corn series hasn't focused on a lot. I remember in the first one we talked about the ending with, like, oh, we keep getting teased about He Who Walks Behind the Rose and what's it going to be. And in the end of that movie, it's really nothing. Like, it's just like a force under the ground that kind of moves dirt sometimes and is a spooky cloud in the air. It's like this one, it's like, you know what? Let's make He Who Walks Behind the Rose a Lovecraftian corn demon. Like, so I'm on board for that. But yeah, Children of the Corn 3, I love it simply because of how silly all of the effect stuff is, and it's the kind of stuff that sticks with you. But as a story, it feels like a direct-to-video kind of plot.
Right. And even though it is a better story than what the second movie gave us, it was one that you were kind of like, okay, we get why you're doing this. We're going to let some things slide. And quickly, I want to specifically talk about the porters, because they take these boys in and we haven't really discussed them too much. But you mentioned earlier that this movie definitely has something on its mind. And I think some of that has to do with just capitalism in general, because much in the way we talked about the Mangler, how that laundry machine was just going to keep running no matter what, William Porter was going to keep selling corn no matter what. And that's what brings us to that sort of ambiguous ending too. You know, as soon as William found out about this corn, he was like, all right, we're going to make some money off of this. And that was really his first thought. It wasn't like, oh, you know, maybe Eli should get something out of this, since he's the one who grew all of this corn and this specific strain and everything. But he keeps it all for himself, seemingly. And in the end, we see him making this deal. I think it's in, like, Germany or something. And you're just like, okay, clearly the corn lives on. So the story isn't over. And they did give you that open ending to where you're like, all right, even though Eli's gone, this thing really is going to have a way to come back, hence the seven other Children of the Corn movies probably. And the wife, she is certainly as skeptical as she has a right to be, because Eli is being so, so creepy, especially to her. And I was just like, oh, there are so many things wrong with, you know, this relationship going on right here. He's just being way too weird to her. And, you know, he kills all of her plants, and she is much more questioning of what this boy is doing in their house.
I will say there is a legitimately shocking moment in this movie, and I forgot it, is that the foster mom is kind of the character that you think is like, okay, she's the one who's getting wise to what's going on here. Uh-huh. She's starting to figure things out. And when she starts to do that, you're like, okay, well, it'll probably be because she seems to have taken to Joshua and seen that he's kind of adapting better and that they might have a relationship. I'm like, okay, it's going to be her and Joshua against Eli in the end. But no, she gets killed in like a cruel joke of a way, mm-hmm. in that she falls backwards and her head is impaled on an open like spigot on this water pipe. And water, when she dies, her mouth is open and water is just dripping out of it, which eventually turns to blood.
Right.
Then the movie cuts to Eli in school raising his hand and he says, "Can I get a drink of water?" I'm like, oh my God, that's such a mean punchline. I kind of love it. And that image of the mom with her mouth open, just like, bah, with all the fake blood spraying out of it. I'm like, this is, they know. But it was genuinely shocking to be like, oh, they killed her off? Okay.
Right.
Where's this going to go? But yeah, I do like Mr. Porter. He's crazy about this corn. He's just like, this corn is amazing. And he's trying to make a deal with this guy. And he's like, you know, we can harvest it in 4 months and it's immune to bugs and pesticide. And then the guy says something. It's like, well, you know, you'd have to do this, you know, get this passed first. It's doing it this way. It's not really ethical. And Porter just goes, fuck ethics. Like he turns into Gollum for a second.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, I think that's the first time I've ever heard you swear. And it's like, he's just, this demon corn is his precious. So I think there's a lot of kind of campy value to be had with the movie because it's really leaning into all that stuff. And I really think that it is self-aware of that. I don't think it's, you know, unconscious of how silly it is. But upon revisiting, I'm like, yeah, I wish there was something more here to the actual story and characters than there is. I think that would actually make it a really secret little gem of a movie. But as it stands, the best stuff is anything that has to do with any gore gags or special effects. Even if they don't necessarily work, there's such a specific feel and kind of a charm behind them that anytime that would happen in the movie, I would just, my face would just light up with a smile.
They certainly felt like they knew that this wasn't going to be the highest quality of movies. So they were like, all right, you know what? We're just going to do our thing. We're going to have fun with it. And people will probably go check it out because it has this tie to Stephen King. And mm-hmm. I can't speak to the success of it or anything. I didn't find any numbers on that since it wasn't a theatrical release. But, you know, people wouldn't still be making Children of the Corn movies if nobody was watching them. At least I would hope not, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, my assumption being that this was direct-to-video, because I certainly remember this VHS cover in every video store I went to growing up. So it's like, oh, well, then that meant they had good sales, you know, to rental places. And I'm assuming that it did well enough that it's like, yeah, they kept making more and more after that, relatively recently after that. It wasn't like the franchise sat for a while or anything. Dimension was churning these movies out on video.
Yeah, I think the fourth one came out in 96, so a year later.
Yeah, so clearly the demand was there. And when we were going to do this episode, I was looking up the following ones because I'm like, yeah, I think I've heard some people say Children of the Corn 5 isn't too bad. And then I look up and Children of the Corn 4, Naomi Watts is starring in it. So that's a very early role for her and another instance of, you know, a big star being in one of these Children of the Corn movies and then going on to a much more prosperous career. So I'm a little interested in the franchise because I feel at this point every sequel is really going to be a standalone movie. I think Children of the Corn 3 even works that way. I think mm-hmm. Children of the Corn 3 is a, you could see it without seeing the other previous two. And like, oh yeah, they fill you in on enough of what's going on and it's nothing directly connected to the first two that it's essential to see them. And I have a feeling that the following Children of the Corn movies are probably going to work the same way, is that probably. It's like, yeah, these are all just standalone stories and you can kind of take them however you want. But yeah, I really want more people to see Children of the Corn 3, because I think a lot of people would enjoy it as just a fun goofball effects movie. I think just on those merits alone, it stands above the other Children of the Corn movies. I think it's, you know, having not seen all the Children of the Corn movies, I can't make this statement, but I feel comfortable enough saying it's probably the most fun Children of the Corn movie that there is.
It's certainly one of those where you should just grab some snacks and watch this, have a good time. And, you know, it's only about an hour and a half, so it's not going to take up too much of your time. And, you know, luckily by the end of it, I wasn't like, oh my goodness, I just wasted an hour and a half. And I, you know, posted on Instagram joking. I was like about to sacrifice an hour and a half of my life for this, but it didn't end up being as bad as I expected. And just to have some reference points, I gave the first Children of the Corn movie a 3 out of 5. I gave the second one a 1 out of 5. That one was just so, so, so bad. I gave this one a 2.5 out of 5, which, given the fact that you and I have differed on some of these, you know, maybe lesser known Stephen King adaptations, I think it's safe to say that that's pretty good for me, you know, giving this a right down the middle of the lane score.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that these kind of movies, they get forgotten about, and there's a number of them that they probably deserve to be forgotten about because they're not doing anything super remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is some remarkable stuff in Children of the Corn 3 Urban Harvest, stuff that if you haven't seen kind of effects gags from Screaming Mad George before, that this will have stuff you're like, I've never seen that done in a movie before. I've never seen sentient corn rip a man's head and spinal column out of his body and then make it into a giant corn stalk. I've never seen a Lovecraftian corn demon that swallows a woman who is then cut out from inside the goopy corn stalk veiny body before she gets digested. That happens in this movie, folks.
That actress must have had quite a day.
Oh my God. There is so much goop on her. Like, I'm glad you mentioned that, is because I had that same thought of just like, that is some of the most goop I've ever seen an actor have to succumb to for a scene. And it's, you know, bless her. She plays the disgust of it all really well. So there's fun stuff like that. If that's something you really like out of this era of horror movies, is all that kind of effect stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I like you said, that this may be the last of the Children of the Corn movies that get any play on this podcast. I mean,
we'll see. If you have an interest in the rest of them, maybe we can do some sort of bonus episode and sort of just give our collective thoughts on some of the others that I don't probably want to dedicate full episodes to.
That might be, yeah, it might just be a rundown of like, these are the ones we made it to and that's it. Cause otherwise I think Children of the Corn 3 Urban Harvest is a high enough note to go out on with this series.
Yeah. And I think some of the others might be a little hard to find. You know, I've tried to find even some stuff on iTunes and I'm just like, where does this thing exist? Where can I watch this? So we'll see on that. I think the more recent one definitely popped up on, you know, all of the platforms because it was 2018. They would kind of be foolish not to do that, but we will definitely see. I will be in touch with you, Drew, if you and I get through some more of these Children of the Corn movies. But for now, just plan on this being the last one. Because I don't know how many people would be interested in 7 more separate episodes on this franchise. But right. Drew, it is always a pleasure to discuss sort of these more cult horror movies that maybe not everyone is familiar with.
Oh, always happy to come on and talk about them.
Well, quickly before we go, I want to let you all know about our Patreon. You can support this podcast for $1 a month or $2 a month. For $2 a month, you get a Chat Cemetery sticker, which there are a limited number of right now. So if you want one of those, definitely make sure you sign up. You can follow us at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. As always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.